We're on vacation.
Hello and welcome to another great episode of the Pluralcast. This week we get to talk with Jay Smelzer from Microsoft, who's going to tell us a little bit, in fact, a lot of bit more about this new product that's currently in beta. Some of us have been hearing a little bit about. It's Visual Studio Light Switch, which, you know, turns out to be a way that maybe, just maybe, my mom can write code. So we'll see if that's the case or not. Now, for the last week here in Boise, Idaho, where I live, I've been sitting up here in my attic office looking north to the foothills and watching fire planes and fire helicopters drop retardant on some smoke that looks like it's coming my way. I've been watching that on the Fire List website, and it turns out that we're probably going to be okay here at Shea Star, but it's been a fun thing to, well, fun, that's a terrible word. It's been an interesting thing to watch the firefighters in action. They've been doing a great job. So rest assured that Pluralcast World Headquarters here in Boise, Idaho, won't be going up in flames. Well, let's get on to our discussion with Jay, who is a group program manager on the Visual Studio team at Microsoft. Jay's team is responsible for a lot of the design tools that we find in Visual Studio supporting other Microsoft products, things like Microsoft Office development tools, SharePoint and Windows Azure solution tools, and now Visual Studio Light Switch, among a lot of other responsibilities. Now, like a lot of people, I think I started this discussion with Jay from a standpoint of seeing or having seen a few marketing demos and getting a taste of what Visual Studio Light Switch is, but I started by asking him if he could help me understand, you know, sort of developer to developer, what is this thing?
Sure. I mean, well, probably the easiest thing to do is let's start with the marketing phrase and work our way into the real meat of it. So at the highest level, our objective is really to create the easiest environment and tools experience for building business applications targeting the desktop or the cloud. Now, when you start peeling that back, what that really means to us is when you think about a business application, it is all about data, getting that data on some UI so users can interact with it, and implementing codifying your custom business rules and logic to ensure that, you know, the data is clean, the rules are being applied, and whatever it is you're trying to automate is being done correctly. All right, so that's at the highest level what the scope of what we're looking for. People have been building these kinds of applications for a long time. We've been going out and looking at and talking to customers about these for quite a bit. And one of the things that is, you know, been something that's been talked about a lot and is just really obvious as you look at these things and talk to folks is there's a lot of code that you have to write today that is boilerplate, it's repetitive, you do the same thing over and over again when you're building one of these applications. And you spend a lot of time doing it. So be that getting data out of the database, putting it on the screen, doing some basic validation, saving those changes back to the database. You know, you implement this stuff over and over again the same way, following the same pattern. And quite honestly, that's not where the value of the application was, right? Someone asked you to build the application because they had a custom set of logic they needed you to implement, and you probably spend more time doing that common stuff than you do actually invested in the custom rules. So we wanted to look at, well, how can we create an environment that just eliminates the need for you to do that, because we provide it for you out of the tool and via the underlying platforms. We implement what are thought of as and mostly agreed upon as best practice patterns for implementing these kinds of applications, so you don't have to think about that either. We're trying to eliminate a lot of the technology choices for you, so, you know, that's another barrier people have is which of the 4 or 5 data access technologies did you want to use for this app, which of the 3 or 4, you know, technologies for communicating from the client to the server did you want to use, which of the 3 or 4 UI presentation stacks did you want to use. We just take that all under, you know, as our burden and say, this is the architecture, this is the implementation we're gonna do for you. And now you go tell us what the app needs to do. Does that make some sense?
Well, it's starting to, and I would ask
You know, I've heard similar things described from other products that have come and gone, frankly. And what I heard you describe is, hey, you know, as developers, we have been building forms over data screens forever, and surely somebody can automate this for us. And that's the light switch attempt. Is that, first of all, did I get that right?
That's pretty close. I think one of the things that you folks will see as they're getting in their hands on the first beta is that the biggest departure we've made from the way those previous tools worked was they tended to just be big code generators, right? You'd go through a set of wizards, and out the other end would be just mounds of code that existed in your project that you then started having to wait, typically having to wade through. A lot of the early ones, the wizard wasn't even, you know, reentrable, right? You had one shot through it, and then you were done. If you made some tweaks, you had to go all the way back and start over again, potentially. And still, you end up with this mounds of code. Well, the approach we're taking is really focusing on a model-centric approach to building an application. That's really what's happening under the covers here, is you're describing your application to the light switch environment. We're generating a model that represents your application, and then we compile that model into a set of assemblies that represent the implementation of that solution for you.
So I wondered if we were going to have some roots in model-driven architecture here, and particularly, you know, I would ask, is this akin to a software factory? Is this the next version of that?
You know, that's an interesting question. I don't really think of it so much akin to the next version of a software factory per se. I mean, I guess you could. We certainly are, you know, this model-centric approach is certainly central and core to the light switch product. Now, of course, we're trying to make it easy for people to do this, so we do everything we can not to throw those concepts at you. You know, you are just using a design tool to define your application, but when it comes down to it, the thing that is being produced by LightSwitch is a model, a series of model files, a series of XAML files, a XAML dialect that is describing your application. Now, I think of that model right now as an implementation detail for us. I have interesting discussions with my architects about whether that is true or not, because it is something that's sitting on disk. It is something that's checked into source control, so it's not so much as an implementation detail as I like to think of it as. The reason I describe it that way is it is subject to change, right? We're not we really do not encourage people to go in and manually modify these files, because we will change them over time. As a company, we've got some efforts underway across Microsoft to really do a better job of continuing to extend standardized models through the application space. As those mature and become agreed upon, we want the ability with LightSwitch to move to those, and now you will have this standard model that you could go and modify, and we'll support continuing to carry forward and not breaking you, kind of thing. Does that make sense?
It does, and you know, I'm sure there are other products that do this, but another one that Microsoft has that comes to mind is the SQL Server development tools inside Visual Studio, the old DataDude stuff. Are you familiar with those tools?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, those are my team now.
Okay, so that
going forward, that's rolled into my team.
So if we think about, I'm just trying to still get my mind around how this works. I'm thinking about that tool and seeing if there's a parallel here. I basically build up in my designers what I want my application or database to do, to look like. I then compile or build, and what I'm building there is a model. And once I have that model built, I'm then genning my code, which in one place is SQL, but in here it might be .NET assemblies. Is that it?
Yeah, that's a really good parallel, right, to how this stuff works. I mean, they're obviously different, you know, different implementations on the covers, different approaches to it, but that is a really good analogy, that in the SQL tools we have in Visual Studio today, you know, and especially in the premium products, you're defining this model, the output of that, you know, based on the target database you're targeting is going to be the appropriate dialect, right, to actually go implement that or instantiate that as a database instance. For LightSwitch, that model today is instantiated as a set of .NET assemblies, you know, a Silverlight client application, a set of .NET RIA services that expose your data to that client application, an entity framework model that is sitting behind those RIA services to talk to your database. And if creating data was part of your application, then actually a database instance as well is the instantiation there.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you guys have been able to model all these different concepts and then sort of unify that. Is this an outcome of some of the modeling stuff around Oslo that we've been hearing about for a long time?
That's certainly one of the teams that we've partnered with and collaborated with quite a bit on this. And that's actually an aspect of the effort I was alluding to across the company to really go drive forward a set of standard application models. So we think about it as today we are completely aligned at the data access layer. So we use Entity Framework. That is the model, right? The data model that we have agreed upon is the one we're all using. At the application layer, we're still working through that. So that's why we consider it for Lightswitch to be a implementation detail, or dare I say even a proprietary implementation right now. And as we evolve across the company to what truly a single shared application definition would look like, we'll move ourselves to that in Lightswitch implementation.
Okay, pretty cool. Well, we dove pretty quickly, pretty deep. So well, I want to back up just a little bit here and ask, in general, who is this targeted for? Is this targeted for enterprise devs? Is it for a hobbyist that's getting a hold of Visual Studio for the first time?
So when we set out to build this product, the key audiences we were looking at were a set of application, custom business application scenarios, and the place we saw them, you know, most prevalent were in small and medium-sized businesses, and then in the departmental scope in larger enterprises. So some of the key characteristics there are, you know, it's probably easier to describe it as what it's not targeted at. We're not going after, and we're not suggesting anyone use Lightswitch to build the mission-critical, you know, system for large enterprises that is used by thousands and thousands of concurrent users. You know, that is not what Lightswitch is targeting. We're not targeting public-facing website development with this product. You know, we really are focused on the set of solutions that are much more common in departmental or business unit scope, or small and medium organizations being used by employees of the company to run the day-to-day activities of the business. That allows us to, first, there's a lot of applications we feel that fall in that category. And the needs of those applications allow us to make assumptions on the way we're using the underlying frameworks and technologies for you. So we don't have to expose all the knobs and whistles and capabilities of the platform that you need to optimize for the high-end enterprise scenario. Does that make sense?
Sure. So I spent this morning, it just so happens, working on a back-end screen for an admin tool for Pluralsight.com. And I had to build some very simple form over data type screens that were talking down to my entities. And there are some pretty common problems that I think people have when building things like that. So I'll ask you maybe how you address some of them. And the first one that comes to mind that I spent probably 30 minutes on this morning was validation. So validation on my both on my screen, and then once I get down into the app on the server side layer.
Okay.
How do you guys deal with that in this application architecture?
The direction Lightswitch is going to try to send you to do validation is really start focusing on the data elements. So, you know, whatever terminology you want to use, whether you want to call it a table, whether you want to call it an entity, you know, if we use something concrete, let's call it customer, right?
Okay.
So you want to do some validation on the attributes of a customer. Depending on, there's a set of validation that will support declaratively. So things like the last name can't be greater than 75 characters, or, you know, phone numbers need to follow these kinds of formats, or, you know, be in these, the numbers need to be in these ranges. You can do that with Lightswitch and do that declaratively just by setting properties in a property grid. There's a set of validation rules that while everything theoretically could be expressed declaratively, there's a set of stuff that's just easier to do as code, right? So let's take an example of the customer again. Maybe we have the ability to track three types of phone numbers for the customer, a home phone, a cell phone, and a work phone. They're all tagged as optional in the definition of the customer, but my rule is that I have to have at least one of those specified for it to be a valid customer entry. So I want to write a piece of code that's going to execute and say, okay, let's make sure I have at least one of these values set. If I don't, throw a validation error or indicate a validation error for that. So you'd go and you'd write a validation rule. You'd tell LightSwitch, hey, I need to validate on this entity or on this specific field. We'll take you into the a method that you can go implement your code. Now, when the application is built and deployed, that set of validation logic is actually going to be compiled into an assembly that adheres to the CLR and Silverlight kind of transparent subset, right? So you have a single assembly that can execute on Silverlight as well as the desktop CLR.
Okay.
So we will send that down with the Silverlight app, so you will get your validation executing in the client, you know, right as the user's working with it. So you get the rich, you know, feedback mechanism that people expect from rich, you know, rich client applications, you know, rich UI applications today.
Sure.
That same set of rules will also run on the server tier, on the data tier, when you go actually try to do updates and things like that to ensure that your rules are being applied. You know, we aren't going to make an assumption that the only client talking to you, to your service is the one we created. So we make sure those rules execute on both sides.
Well, there's the power of generate from model in a nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Because, yeah, today you yourself would have either had to figure out that there's this way of creating a single assembly that can be deployed across both, or more often than not, you've implemented the validation rule on both sides, right? Or use some Visual Studio tricks to do shared, you know, sharing of code and compiling it in both directions kind of stuff, right?
And we've already talked several times about the types of applications we might be interested in, but what's the actual footprint of these things? Because when I look at LightSwitch on Microsoft.com, what I see is build applications for the cloud and the desktop. So what does that translate into?
Sure. So what we're creating is a Silverlight client application. We are creating this set of .NET RIA services that expose the data to your client. So that's a set of .NET assemblies that are going to be deployed and executed on the desktop CLR. And then depending on your application, if you've created new data structures, then we will have a database instance that we create for you. You can also just use nothing but existing data, so existing databases, existing SharePoint lists, existing services, in which case you don't have us generating any of the actual data storage or data persistence for you. So that's what we create. Now, we support, in the first beta, we support three ways of deploying that. You can deploy it in a classic two-tier environment where we'll collapse that service tier and the client tier into, you know, one physical machine, and we'll deploy that, both of those components, down to your client machine. You can deploy into a three-tier environment where now you've specified for us where a IIS server is that we will deploy your middle tier logic to, and your services. Your client will still come down, you know, as a Silverlight client. And with that three-tier environment, you can choose to either deploy the client as an out-of-browser desktop app. So it's a Silverlight 4 out-of-browser hosted app in the extended sandbox, so you can talk COM to other applications on the client. You can talk to the operating system, you know, the file system, things like that. Or you can deploy it as a browser-hosted Silverlight 4 client, in which case you're in the Silverlight 4 browser sandbox. You have the browser frame, the browser Chrome around you, and you can't get outside of that sandboxed environment.
Okay. Well, one of the things that you mentioned in your earlier description was the use of best practice patterns within the generation of that code. Does that mean that, for example, I might have a peek inside that Silverlight application and find MVVM?
That's exactly what you would find. So when we hinted on one aspect of code you could write, which was this, you know, validation kind of logic that sits in that gets compiled into a transparent or assembly that can be executed on both sides. You can write code that we typically describe as screen code, which is things that you want to actually execute in the client application. Maybe you're going to programmatically drive the flow of the application from one screen to another, things like that. When you do that, when you write that code, you're obviously writing Silverlight code at that point. But when you try to program against you never program directly against the Silverlight controls themselves, right? You program against a view model that we've created for you. There is these narrow paths where you can get all the way out into the other stuff if you really needed to, but that's not, you got to go really looking to find that. We optimize the experience around programming against this view model for you to get a separation of concerns there. In the back end, you have the ability to write code that's going to execute as part of what we refer to typically as our data pipeline. And really what that means is you can get into and have the ability to hook in before and after activities happen to the data store. So think of it as you really see it manifesting as an inserting, inserted, updating, updated, you know, retrieving, retrieved kind of entry points into that pipeline. So you can implement additional logic there before or after data is changed or retrieved.
Oh, I get it. So that's where I might do some sort of transformation from one data type to another, things like that.
Sure, you could do things like that. You can, you know, if you're doing things where, hey, when I save the order, I need to allocate the inventory, right?
Right.
You could do that as part of that, you know, back in that part of the solution.
Okay, now that ends up, though, being code that I'm going to write, correct, that hooks into that pipeline, whereas the pipeline itself gets generated, my code is an add-on to that?
Correct. Your code would be compiled as your code. If you put code everywhere, you'd end up with an assembly that is a Silverlight assembly going down as part of the ZAP, right, as part of the Silverlight project.
Okay.
You'd end up with code sitting in this assembly that goes both places. So a copy of it would go into the ZAP to execute your validation logic in the client. A copy of it would go on the server to execute your validation logic there. And then you'd have a desktop CLR assembly that would go on your, using air quotes, your server, right, to implement your hooks into that update pipeline. Alongside of that would be a second assembly on the server and a second assembly on the client that is what the model generated as your application in those tiers.
Right.
So you could think of it as the, you know, my app client.generated.dll and my app client.dll and your my app server generated.dll and my app server.dll, right? You could think of a pattern like that as what you'd actually see on disk.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So when I tap into that model generated code, is that loading through Meth by any chance?
It certainly is.
Oh, I guessed right.
Meth is a big part of our underlying both application and tooling architectures. So
yet another reason for us all to learn Meth. Cool.
Well, I'd say it's another reason for folks that want to go in and really do more advanced extensions and customizations of a light switch application to go learn Meth. Folks that are just going to use light switch, you won't have to know anything about Meth to be successful with it. So,
well, one thing I'm curious about is the name, because when I look at the webpage today, it says Visual Studio Light Switch. So it's actually got the development tool name packaged right in there. How is this thing going to be packaged and managed?
Sure. So actually I'm going to take advantage of this entry point and go back to one of the other questions that we answered half of, which was who is this targeted at?
Okay.
We definitely see this as a developer product, right? That's part of the reason why it's a Visual Studio branded product. Now, when I say developer, there really are, in my mind, two big classes of developers. There's what I'll call the big D developer, right, where you're a professional developer. You have developer as part of your title. You're paid to build software. You know, those are folks that, for the most part, Visual Studio professional, premium, ultimate are targeted at that individual. And then you have a set of folks that are developers, but they're more of a small D developer. They don't have developer in their title, but they are building solutions, maybe just for themselves, but probably more for their immediate work group. And that's the group that really spawned the investigations and the thoughts around creating something like Lightswitch. That was the group that we really felt we were not serving well, and that we had created this gap of tooling experiences from Microsoft that sort of, there's a big gap between what folks could do with a product like Access and what folks could do with Visual Studio. And so we created Lightswitch to sit and fill that gap between those two products. So it's a development tool. The other way I could describe it is it's really for folks that are comfortable with the fact that you're probably going to write some code as part of building your solution. Certainly, the most simple Lightswitch application, you could create one that involves zero user-authored code. That is certainly possible, but realistically, you're going to write a couple lines of code to get the solution you want. And so that's why we feel it is a developer-oriented product, part of the Visual Studio family, and so forth. Now, how it's actually going to come out, it will ship as its own Visual Studio product, so you know, what we call a SKU, so it's an entry in the product family, so you can go out and when we ship the product, you'll be able to buy Visual Studio Lightswitch as a standalone product. For customers that have Visual Studio Professional Premium and Ultimate with an MSDN subscription, you'll be able to download and basically the Lightswitch add-on, and we will add Lightswitch into those products. And you can visualize it's going to surface itself as basically a project type inside of Visual Studio Professional Premium or Ultimate for those customers.
Okay. I have to ask this question. You know it's coming because I'm sure everybody's asked this. So what you just said is you guys built a great tool for those people who are just getting ready to step up from building access applications, try a little bit of development, but they're going to need a premium SKU or some type of SKU of Visual Studio above standard to get it.
Well, no. So Lightswitch will be its standalone SKU, right? So you can go buy Lightswitch all by itself. You don't need Professional Premium or Ultimate at all. You can
purchase. I'd purchase it at that point.
Got it. You would purchase that one. If you already had Professional Premium or Ultimate with an MSDN subscription, then we'll give you a package that you can add that in, so you don't have to go buy it again.
Okay, so sure. Any even ballpark ideas about pricing? Probably not, since you guys are in beta, but I thought I'd ask.
Yeah, we're still trying to solidify that. It will be a 4-pay SKU, so its pricing will sit somewhere between the Express products, which are free, and the Professional product, which is quite a bit more than free.
Oh, so
somewhere in that spectrum.
Now I just got this new view of it. Are you saying that what I do is I go out and I buy Lightswitch, and with that comes my little version of Visual Studio? Okay. I thought you were telling me, well, I got to go buy Visual Studio Standard, and then I'm going to add Lightswitch to it, and that's two purchases.
Oh, no. You'll go buy Lightswitch, and you have your own little version of Visual Studio.
Great, okay.
So you buy Lightswitch, and if you've seen the videos and the demos, you buy Lightswitch, and everything you saw in those videos, that's what you get. Visual Studio environment with just those Lightswitch project types and project support, that's what you get.
Well, now that naming makes a lot more sense. It's SKU in and of itself almost.
Yeah, it is. Sorry.
Great. Well, I'll tell you what. How about this? Could you take me through the developer experience just a little bit? I know that's kind of hard sometimes when we don't have a screen, but what would I see? I'm going to launch this version of Visual Studio, and what I want to do is build a very simple address entry form. How would I go about it? And let's just say I've already got a database sitting there, perhaps.
Yeah, well, so what's going to happen is, You're gonna launch a product. You're gonna go create a new project. The only question we're gonna ask you is which programming language would you like to use when you need to start writing your own code? Do you want to use Visual Basic or do you want to use C#?
I want to use Iron Ruby. I'm kidding.
Then you'll close the product.
I'm just playing. Go ahead.
I know. So you'll choose the language of which of those two languages you want to use. We'll spin up the project for you. And the first thing that you're going to be presented with is an entry point to start defining the data you want to use as part of the application. And we'll give you the ability to either start defining new data, so creating new tables, or what we call attaching to an existing data source. So if you've already got a database that you're using and you want to go do maybe an admin set of admin screens on top of it, you'll say, I want to attach to an existing database. You'll be presented with the options, the types of databases or types of data sources we support. You'll see database as one of them. You'll see SharePoint as one, and you'll see WCF Ria Service as one. So in your case, if you can go directly against the database, you'll choose database. You get the typical, give me the connection information. What's the server name? What credentials do I have? Oh, here's the database, right? And then you start choosing the data elements out of the database that you want to work, the schema elements you want to work with. So
okay.
Pick the set of address tables, for example.
Sort of like building up, sure. Sort of like building up a little entity maybe with Entity Framework or something.
Yeah, that's under the covers, that's exactly what we're doing. We're just trying to simplify it, and you're just starting to define the data portion of your application model that way. Yeah, so once you've chosen the tables you wanted to work with, you'll actually be presented with our data modeling tool, and it'll be open to, you know, one of the tables, whichever one, making our best guess to figure out which is maybe the most relevant one. And you'll see how we've been able to map the columns of the database, the data types of the database, into this structure. From there, you can actually go and modify or annotate on top of the model a little bit more. So one of the things we support is what we typically refer to as business types. And these are just semantic types that sit on top of the underlying data source. So the best example would be, think of something like a phone number, right? In the database, that's typically stored as a character value, as a string, right?
Right.
Well, when you attach to a data source and you take something as a string, you drop that down and you'd see this set of business types like phone number that you could choose from. And what that does is it tells the LightSwitch application model, hey, I know a little bit more about this value than just a string. And so now we can go and we can do presentation logic around it. We can do some default validation rules around it, some formatting, all that kind of stuff for you, because those were all built in as part of this business type. We support a set of them out of the box. It's an extension point of the product, so professional developers can go create their own business types and add them into the experience. So if you have maybe a policy number that is a common thing that your organization needs to use and work with in these applications, you could have one person build up the policy number data type and encode all those rules and presentation logic in it and let all the other LightSwitch developers use that. That's not changing the underlying schema of the database in any way. It's just, you know, adding information to the model for us. So you go through and finish doing all those kinds of things, making those modifications, you know, setting what other kind of metadata you might want on your data model. And then the next thing you would probably do is go create a piece of UI. At this point, we present you with a set of screen templates. They're really just patterns. One of the things we saw when looking at these applications was, wow, there's a set of very common UI patterns that people implement over and over again in a business app, right? You have grid screens, you have list and detail screens, master detail screens, you have screens that are optimized for finding something and then navigating to the more detailed view of it. So those patterns are presented to you. You choose the one you want, tell us what data elements should be part of it, and then we go lay out the screen for you. At this point, most people, what I would encourage they do is, okay, hit F5 and let's see what we have and get familiar with what's going on. And now you would see the application would pop up and you actually have an application. You have an application shell that includes, you know, global commanding. It includes navigation menus, windowing systems, you know, some of those core capabilities you just need in an application. And then you would see your screen would pop up and render whatever data you add to based on the template and what you told us to display. Depending on the screen, you have built-in capabilities there as well. So things like grids automatically have the ability to export to Excel, filtering, searching, paging, all those kinds of things are just built in by default. The developer could turn them off if they would like, but you know, our approach with LightSwitch is we'll turn things on that we feel are common capabilities and give you the ability to turn them back off rather than you having to figure out, oh, export to Excel was supported. I just needed to flip the switch. We kind of go the opposite route with it. So you do that while the application is running. You can take a screen and as a developer and put it into a customization mode where you can now do additional UI tweaking and, you know, maybe it's reordering columns, maybe it's changing control types. And you can do that with the live data behind there. So you're really getting a rich experience and seeing exactly how your UI is going to look with the real data loaded in the screen. When you're done with that, you can flip back out to customization mode. We save that back to your model, but keep the app, take you right back into the running app instance and let you keep working there.
Oh, very cool. Well, I'll tell you, the way you've described that, maybe I'll need to sit my mom down in front of LightSwitch and have her build something for me.
Well, is your mom a developer?
Well, not yet.
I mean, one of the things I think we'll find is, I know, you know, that there's certainly been a little bit of confusion, which is expected when people are seeing is press write-ups and videos. But I think once you see the product, you realize there's certainly some strong developer roots in the product.
Sure.
We've tried to streamline the experience. We've tried to focus the experience as best we can, but you know, there are certainly some developerisms that will filter up through there, which I think is a fine thing. So it's definitely for the folks that are a little more developer minded than maybe the pure, you know, kind of business user, average end user kind of person. But
sure. You know, one thing that I'm curious about, how long have you guys been working on this? It seems like this, and maybe it's just because I don't listen to the right sources or something, but this was sort of a well-held secret. So what's that all about?
Well, so I'd say the real core team probably started on this right around 2 years ago. So we have been working on it for quite a while and somehow managed to really keep it pretty quiet. You know, we did that for a couple of reasons. You know, we really felt that this was the kind of thing that to get people to understand what we were trying to do, we needed to be really close to having a product we could give people that could demonstrate the capabilities we were talking about. Because otherwise, as you say, when we first talk about it, it sounds like things that have been done before, tried before, and didn't really land. So that was part of the reason we decided, let's try to keep this under wraps for a while until we have something that can really demonstrate what we're talking about. We certainly had a very small group of folks that, you know, outside of Microsoft that we worked very closely with to get feedback early on and ensure we were doing kind of headed in the right direction and that kind of stuff. But it is amazing that we went that long without it getting out.
Well, you did a good job of avoiding things that other teams have had, like, I don't know, manifestos and such.
Well, and that's the other thing is we also knew that, you know, we were going to probably go through a few changes from the original idea to what we actually were going to put in market. And to be quite honest with you, if I'd showed you the very original versions, it was targeted purely at WPF desktop apps. And at the time that seemed like the right thing to do as we were getting a little further along and realized, whoa, the browser trend is catching on way faster. The Silverlight capabilities are getting, you know, out of browser capabilities are really catching up to the desktop. Hey, we can cover both markets if we move to a Silverlight implementation. And that just doubled our kind of app type surface area. So boy, that's the right thing to do. So let's shift quick and move over there. And we certainly pushed the Silverlight 4 guys a little bit on some of their capabilities to make sure that we could build the kinds of apps we needed to with that. So,
well, what didn't I know enough to ask you about that's just burning a hole in your brain?
Well, so, I mean, you know, one of the things that we don't tend to talk about a lot, we don't demo or show off a lot is, you know, we show a lot of the experience of building the application and, you know, how you go from zero to an app and build a functional app and write code and implement your logic. We started showing some things around how you can extend that further using Visual Studio Pro Premium or Ultimate or Blend to build really custom things that plug into the experience. So, you know, you can build custom screens that plug in using Blend and Visual Studio Pro. So we've shown some of that stuff. One of the things we don't show a lot is really the deployment experience. And admittedly, in the first beta, it's a bit rough still. But really the idea that, okay, once you're done with the application, done developing it, and you're ready to distribute it, what's that experience like? And so we take you through a series of steps where, depending on the deployment topology you've chosen, that two-tier, three-tier approach, we will either generate an MS Deploy package for you that you can hand off to, you know, the infrastructure administrator that is going to actually install it on your servers. So, and that will include the appropriate scripts for any databases we need to create, you know, the assemblies and services for your middle tier and the ZAP for your client. You can also, of course, publish directly from within the Lightswitch environment if you have the credentials to push those things to the machines. As part of the process, you know, we're going to gather up from you any changes to configuration that need to happen. You know, the most obvious thing would be, all right, I need to move from my development connection strings to my production or staging connection strings for my data sources, and so forth. And we can push that stuff all out and create those packages. After the first beta, as we get closer to the next beta, which we'll have in the final release, we'll add another deployment target to that experience and will allow you to push these applications directly into Windows and SQL Azure. So in that case, you can go completely into the cloud and not have any on-premise server infrastructure to worry about. So that's a spot we don't tend to talk about a whole lot.
Not yet, it sounds like.
Not yet, anyway. We will definitely be amping that up quite a bit.
Well, right on. Well, thanks so much, Jay. This has been great. I appreciate the explanation, and now I think I get it.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you having me on.
Okay, well, now we know what Visual Studio Light Switch is, and by all indications, maybe, just maybe, my mom can start writing code. We'll see. I'll keep you posted. Meantime, thanks so much for joining us for another episode of The Pluralcast. And we want The Pluralcast to be your favorite technical program. So get involved a little bit. Head on over to cast.pluralsight.com and shoot us a line. What would you like to hear a show about? Would you like to be on the show? You got an interesting story to tell us? We'd love to hear it. As always, our music is by The Judies, and you can learn more about The Judies at wastedtalentrecords.com. Thanks so much. This has been Dave Starr, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in class sometime soon. Don't be a hippie. Don't be a hippie.